I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Well, it is Memorial Day weekend, boys. We are recording this on the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. So, you know, the entire frontier of holiday weekend lies ahead of us. This is an exciting time to be alive. That's all I've got to say.
It's just starting. We wanted to start our holiday weekend together, as families do.
With one another. Uh-huh.
To
nude celebrate. Casting. We are nude casting.
Okay, yeah. I didn't get that memo, but
I didn't need a memo.
That's just Wayne.
That's Wayne's natural. Yeah, that's his natural state right there.
Well, we have a lot to get caught up on because we did not record last weekend, I don't think.
We did not.
So and part of that was that I was out of town on work, my day job, my paying career. Took me out of town last week. Now, one of the benefits of going out of town, if you're flying somewhere, we've talked about this on the podcast before, is that you have dedicated plane time in which you really can't do a damn thing other than watch whatever's on your phone or your iPad if you've downloaded stuff. So I was going to Austin, Texas, and I saw a few things. I saw the season finale of X-Men 97, there were two movies that I saw, gentlemen. I saw Arthur the King, which I'm going to start by talking about Arthur the King. So Arthur the King is a movie with Mark Wahlberg, where Marky Mark is an adventure racer. And if you're not familiar with adventure racing, they basically give you a place to start and a place to end. And you have to find your way from one place to another by any means necessary, but not like a vehicle. Like you can ride a bike, you have to climb a mountain, you have to canoe or paddleboard or whatever. And you know, this is a true story, where he is an adventure racer. It also has Simu Liu from Shang-Chi, so it is adjacent comic books. But the whole point of Arthur the King is that they come across a dog during one of their adventure races that's like 400 and something miles, and they basically adopt this dog who helps them in their adventure race. Now, when this film came out in theaters, they very much clearly advertised it as, hey, the dog does not die. They're like, just so you know, the dog doesn't die. And they advertised it. Literally, it's in the trailer. So I'm not spoiling anything by saying the dog doesn't die. It's in the trailer.
I appreciate that. Extra marks for me.
Is it provided as like a trigger warning, or is it, you know, like embedded in the trailer? Like, and by the way, the dog doesn't die in the adventure race.
Basically, it's kind of more the latter, right? They're like, just, you know, because they're like, it's an inspirational story. And guess what? The dog doesn't die.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, you know, I tried to convince Jen to see it in the movie theaters because I'm a Marky Mark fan.
Oh, yeah.
You are. And she refused. I'm like, but it says the dog doesn't die. And she's like, but the dog experiences hardships, and that's bad. I don't want to see, even if it's a happy ending, I don't want to see the dog experience hardships. And so I understood that, right? You know, the dog does, in fact, get injured and undergo surgery at some point in the movie, but the dog survives. But I'm watching this movie on the plane, and God damn it, it gets to the ending, and I start, like, tearing up. And I'm like, no, no, no.
Wow, and Paul doesn't do that. Paul doesn't experience.
Because it's a dog. If it was Marky Mark on the surgery table, I'd be like, he'll be okay. But it was Arthur. And I'm like, no, what's happening? Don't do this. Don't do this. Swallow it up inside. It was actually a pretty good movie. I mean, it's not at all comic book related, but it was worth watching. I ordered it on like Apple TV. It's not free yet. It's still on demand. But it's if you're into that kind of thing, you know, inspirational true stories and a happy ending where the dog doesn't die. And they show it, like I said, it's based on a true story. So they do show pictures of the actual dog, you know, in still alive. So it had a happy ending.
Yeah, still alive. I think I recall seeing advertisements for that back in the day, but I'll have to check that out. I rather enjoy Marky Mark as well. There has been a movie that I've wanted to watch for a while, but I haven't wanted to pay for it. I wanted to wait till it hit one of my streaming services. And The Revenant finally came back to streaming service.
That movie's so good.
Oh, Paul, I wildly disagree.
Wait, I want to make sure I'm familiar with I want to make sure I'm looking up the right movie.
With Leonardo DiCaprio?
I'm thinking of a different movie. Never mind.
Because, you know, it's an Oscar-nominated film. In fact, Leonardo DiCaprio won Best Actor. for his portrayal there. And I, the whole time I'm like, this is going to get better, right? This is going to be entertaining at some point. The highlight of the movie happens in the first third when he's mauled by a bear. And, you know, it's not just mauled once by the bear. He's mauled multiple times by the bear. I mean, the bear comes back and I'm not done fucking with this guy yet. I mean, and it is so aggressive. It's almost like the bear is raping him. Yeah. I mean, it is a disturbing scene.
That's what all the memes were about.
Well, I mean,
so many memes.
It was shocking, but I don't understand why Leo got nominated, much less won the Oscar for that one, because there is no range in his character. He is every bit as dour and sad in the beginning of the film as he is at the end of the film. The only thing that changes is he is much more crippled at the end of the film than he was at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. And so I went and I looked at who else was nominated that year. And what blows me away is that was also the year that Matt Damon was nominated for his portrayal in The Martian.
Mm. Oh, wow.
A film where he's having to hold the screen by himself the majority of the picture. And he has a range. I mean, like, when you compare those two performances, I don't understand why Leonardo DiCaprio got the Oscar. I truly don't. Other than the fact that he lost 35 pounds for the role. I thought it was a miserable movie.
It's a hard watch. It's like there's no joy.
There's nothing. I mean, it's frontier life. It is, you know, it's demonstrating the hardship of frontier life and how hard the frontiersmen were. It just, there was nothing there to really enjoy. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Maybe the bear should have won the award.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the bear was my favorite character, and Leo kills him off.
The bear did not make it to the end of the film, unlike Arthur the King.
Yeah. So.
Well, Aaron, perhaps what you should have watched instead was the other movie that I watched
The
plane, Monster Mash. So this is a recent release from The Asylum. Yeah, the people who do instead of Godzilla, they have like giant lizard versus Megalodon.
Yeah, I'm familiar with them.
They have a new film called Monster Mash starring Michael Madsen as Dr. Victor Frankenstein.
I haven't seen him on film in forever.
Yeah, good for you, because and it was a mistake. He plays Dr. Victor Frankenstein, who kidnaps Dracula's daughter. And so Dracula has to team up with the Invisible Man, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein's creature, and to take down Victor Frankenstein.
That seems like overkill. Why do you need all those people to take down Frankenstein? Why can't Dracula seems more than competent to take on
taking
Frankenstein
down
himself?
The doctor or the creature?
The doctor.
Taking down the creature. Taking down the doctor. Taking down the doctor.
He's just a human man.
Yeah.
Well, so keep in mind, it's a mystery.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Victor Frankenstein kidnaps so at this point in the movie, the creature is still working for Frankenstein. Yeah, spoilers. So
does he get a W-2? Or is it a 1099?
He just gets abused. like the rest of us. But, you know, Victor Frankenstein, he kidnaps Dracula's daughter, and Dracula doesn't know who kidnapped his daughter, so he seeks out help to uncover the mystery. And so he goes and sees his friend, the Wolfman or and then the Invisible Man, because Victor Frankenstein, it's all part of the mystery, is taking he needs like the blood of the Wolfman. He needs like a piece of skin from the Invisible Man. And so they're tracking down. It's all tied together until they culminate in having to do battle with a super powered Dr. Victor Frankenstein at the end.
You said Asylum produced it. Was this a Universal film?
No, it was not.
Okay.
Not an official one, anyway.
It sounds interesting, but it was not good.
It is. Here's the thing. It is joyfully terrible. How about that? You know, it's an Asylum film, right? So if you go in to watch, like I said, Giant Lizard versus Megalodon or Sharknado, you're not going in for Shakespeare.
Sure. Yeah.
It is certainly a low budget B, maybe Z grade film. I had fun with it. It is not a good film. It is not a good movie, but it's fun.
You, Have you seen Victor Frankenstein with James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe?
I have. No, I saw Victor Frankenstein with James McAvoy and I have not seen that one. No, I'm sorry. Okay, I know what you're talking about. No, I have not seen that one.
It's actually pretty good. It is because Daniel Radcliffe plays Igor and James McAvoy plays Victor Frankenstein. And I was surprised at how good it was. Now, it's not a great movie, but it is very McAvoy is wildly entertaining in the film.
I like McAvoy. I might have to check that out.
He's just fucking crazy.
I think if I was the Invisible Man, I would just screw with Dracula and be like, I need some of your skin. Like, okay, I put it in your hand for reals. It's there. Trust me. Wink, 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 wink.
Go ahead.
Oh, but you're referring to Frankenstein movies. I don't know if any of you have seen the Benedict Cumberbatch, Johnny Lee Miller, Frankenstein.
I've not seen that one.
It was actually a theater production that they basically those two actors would alternate who played the creature and who played the doctor. And they filmed a movie. Danny Boyle directed the movie, who did like 28 Days Later and. Like 127 Hours and a bunch of like Oscar nominated movies did a movie of it. And it was pretty damn good. I mean, I think I obviously I'm into that kind of entertainment, even if it's cheesy B grade. And so that's what drew me to Monster Mash. I'm glad I watched it. It is not something I can recommend, though.
Well, A24 has a ton of their movies on Max right now. It's like, you know, Max has a whole channel almost for the A24 film. So I have watched several over the last week or so. And the one I watched last night is, again, another movie that I've wanted to see for a long time. The Lighthouse with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Okay. You know, that's kind so of what'd you think of that movie, Aaron?
I loved it.
Did you really?
I did. It was, now, don't get me wrong, it is bleak and dark and creepy as hell. And it's sort of a man's journey into madness, as all Cthulhu-type movies are, or stories are. What I really enjoyed was it's shot in black and white, and it really embraces the techniques that were used in, prior times making black and white film. It felt, even though there is some modern special effects in it, it just felt very period, right? It felt authentic. It felt like this could have been a 1940s horror film, except that it's much creepier than stuff that was made back then. But his descent into madness, I thought, was really well portrayed. In fact, I'm not a Robert Pattinson fan. I really enjoyed him in this. I thought his performance was fantastic. And Willem Dafoe is just terrible in it. Not terrible acting, but just a terrible, person that he's portraying. I dug it. I dug the film a lot. In fact, it's super creepy again. And I am in the last quarter of the movie, and so everything is really heightened, accelerated. I'm watching watching it on my iPad, with earbuds in, under the pergola in my backyard. It's 11 o'clock at night, and as you're seeing tentacles occasionally coming into the screen, and I hear Aaron. I about come out of my skin. I'm like, good. In fact, Flip, my dog, is asleep at my feet, just chilling. And he goes tearing ass to the fence to see what it is. And the voice again, Aaron. And it freaks him out so much. He comes tearing all the way back across the deck and skids to a stop, just barking his head off like, danger, danger, danger. And here is my drunk next door neighbor with her gigantic glass of wine. I just wanted to come over and tell you how much I enjoy the smell of your cigar. I know I've done this before, but I really enjoy the smell of your cigar. My husband, he hates the smell of the cigar, but I wanted to come over and tell you how much I enjoy it. I just really like the smell of your cigar. And I'm like, God damn it. scared the tar out of me, scared the dogs. really heightened the level of the movie watching.
See, I thought it was going to be Suzanne coming up behind you, but yeah, the drunk neighbor, that's even better.
Yeah, yeah. Twist.
With her twist. Gigantic goblet of red wine in her hand and just kind of barely standing upright.
She said, you know, she might be even, a little sweet on you.
Yeah, even though you already said goblet of wine, still, every time you say her gigantic, I do not expect it to be followed by a goblet of wine.
But I dug it, Paul. I dug it. I particularly liked the mermaid stuff when Triton shows up and all the tentacles. It was good stuff.
Yeah, not mine. I did not get into it.
A whole lot of A24 movies out there.
Yeah, looking at it now, there's a lot of good stuff there. I mean, yeah. You know, there's The Witch, which is excellent. Hereditary. I mean, if you're into like that, you know, the current artsy horror trend, lots of stuff on Max.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that's what. Let's talk about something all of us watched this week. Wait, right? Did all of us see the season finale of X-Men 97?
I did.
I did not. But you guys talk about it.
Oh no, Andrew.
No, I know. Go ahead. Do your business.
What if we ruin it for you?
It's okay.
Do you need to take your headphones off?
No, I'll be all right.
Everyone dies. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, they're X-Men. That none of them really die. Even if they did die, they didn't really die.
Fair. Well, I kind of want to hear from Wayne. He's been loving the X-Men 97. How do you feel about how it wrapped up the first season? Because we do know there's a second season coming.
And a third.
Yeah. And no, a third. I have absolutely loved it, and I have been shocked by the storylines that they actually pulled off. Some of them, I think, were done better than in the comics. The fact that they managed to hit Inferno, Operation Zero Tolerance, Fatal Attraction.
Yeah.
Just so many of these that I never thought we would see in animated form from Marvel, they actually followed up on. I mean, they could very well be leading up to Onslaught. I love the idea that they're going to follow the storyline where everyone thinks the X-Men are dead, but they come back in, like, Africa.
Wasn't that Australia? Weren't they in the
Australia?
Base?
Australia?
Yeah. Australia, I think.
I can easily see that happening in season two. Love seeing Apocalypse again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the way it wrapped up, you know, I mean, the show just, it's funny because they lured you in with this false sense of like, hey, we're just going to make it, we're just going to continue the old show. It's going to feel like the old show. It's going to be great for kids and everybody.
Yeah, it does not feel like the old show.
Yeah, and then it just turns into like murder and death and violence and blood and, you know, I mean, I thought the three-part season finale was excellent. I mean, there's a scene, and I don't remember if it's in part two or part three, because it's a three-part finale where, you know, I think it's in the second part, where Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Cable are, like, in a car, mm-hmm. and they're being chased by these, you know, these sentinel creatures, and they're just, like, you know, driving through a tunnel and blasting holes, and, you know, it's like an action movie. I'm like, this is exciting as hell.
Yeah.
Like, this is really, really well done.
And what I really appreciate about it is the economy of storytelling. You know, it is, there is nothing decompressed about any of this. It mm-hmm. is, I mean, what Wayne described, how many storylines they moved through, and none of it feels rushed. It just seems very well paced, and you know,
it seems well integrated, right? Taking these different stories and integrating them into one overall structure was really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the things I found interesting, I had mentioned that I think they did some things better than the comic, particularly Cyclops's reaction to Madeline.
Yeah.
In the comics, when Cyclops finds out that Jean's alive, he completely abandons his wife and child to go run after his you know, dead ex, and is like an abandoning father, you know, basically is just a horrible person. And here we actually see the struggle mm-hmm. of, it isn't just Jean's back, they're back together, everything's happy. We see him struggle with the fact that he's lived with Madeline thinking she was Jean, that he had a daughter with her. He still thinks about her as well. Jean struggles with the fact that Madeline exists and, you know, which one was actually which at different points. It just was so much more mature storytelling than the way they originally did it in the comics. It isn't clear cut, and he's not such a horrible person. You feel for him.
Yeah. I thought it was really well done. I really did. I thought it was just a terrifically produced series, and I can't wait for season two, and just excited that there's a season three that's being written right now.
Yeah, the only thing that I'll say is, you know, the first season, like they fired the showrunner of the first season before the second season started to go into production. But he wrote all of the second season, and they said they would continue his vision into the second season. But I think season three will have a different, you know, kind of writing team and showrunner entirely. So hopefully it maintains the level of quality as the first season.
The one frustrating thing it did is the same thing the comics used to do to us. It'll give us a cliffhanger, and then we'll have something entirely different in the next episode and have to wait to come back to the story.
Yep. Well, they haven't announced when season two is coming, but it is in production. So it was good. It was real good.
Groovy, groovy.
Well, gentlemen, I had a week full of ape entertainment.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. The other day, I got to see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Exactly.
I have told you guys the story of when an ape showed up at my family reunion, right?
I don't think I've heard this story, Wayne.
Yes. This was years ago at the family reunion, and a guy comes in with a monkey. He apparently is a relative of mine that has a monkey.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the ape was a relative of yours.
Actually, I sent pictures out to people, and somebody replied back, I think we're related. But yeah, there's a monkey in a in a diaper and sunglasses walking around, and then we go out to the playground, and the monkey holds my hand as we walk out. It's like a buddy movie or something.
That's funny. I don't know that I would even attend a family reunion, frankly, but if there was one. Showed up, let's just say I was at a party and someone brought their pet monkey, I don't know what I would do. I'd probably do what Wayne did. I'd probably like take it by the hand and walk around and have pictures taken. We'd go on adventures together.
Exactly.
The apes in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes do not feel like they would take kindly to a fun adventure.
So how was it, Paul?
Yeah, I'd say I wasn't sure going into this one how it was going to be, because this is the first one without Andy Serkis.
Right.
It is setting up, which I didn't know this going in, it's setting up the next trilogy of movies. So we're introduced to the new characters that are going to be continuing on for two more movies. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, honestly, I thought it was just as good as the originals. I thought it had the same emotional weight. I thought it had great characters. I thought the new apes that they introduced, the new families that they introduced, were, you know, you grow attached to them. Like Noah is the main ape in this film, and you grow attached to Noah in the same way that you grew attached to Caesar. And they do, you know, kind of talk a bit about the legacy of Caesar. Because this takes place, it says generations later, but it really can't be that long because one of the apes from the original trilogy is still alive. So maybe, maybe a generation or two. There was an ape who showed up, and I'm like, wait, I thought this said generations later. But I would probably say maybe, I don't know how long apes live, but
yeah, it is a huge movie about legacy.
Yeah.
Legacy is both legacy of humans and legacy of Caesar is a major point of the movie. And for me, like out of the new movies, I put this up there as second best out of them. Way better than the last two for me.
See, I love the last two. Battlefur and the Beyond the or whatever they're called. I really love those. But I liked this film quite a lot. I mean, I'd say it's just as good. I like the what they're setting up. With this trilogy, and that, you know, there is definitely a human aspect to this film, and what the humans are doing in the same way that the previous ones were, but, you know, kind of what the humans are setting up in the end of this film.
Yeah,
really interesting.
Again, there are so many little Easter eggs throughout the whole thing to callbacks to both the original movies and these previous ones and the reboots.
Mm-hmm.
I still at some point expect for astronauts to show up, because in the first of the new movies, we saw on the TV screen Taylor's ship taking off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would feel out of place, honestly, to introduce time travel to this. But it's really good. Aaron, I think you would really enjoy it. If you enjoyed the first three, it does not. I was worried that they shouldn't have continued it, right?
Yeah.
They should have let that trilogy rest with the ending that it had, but the way they continued it, I did not feel like it robbed the original of any of its weight, and I feel like it did a good job.
And it made me excited for more.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea where they were going to go with it. I really didn't. And now I want to see the rest of the story. I'm invested in these characters. Visually, with the birds, because one of the tribes of apes is the Eagle Clan that raise birds.
Yeah.
And so you see, like, throughout it, all of these scenes from the perspective of birds soaring over the land that's been retaken by nature. It's just beautiful and terrible at the same time.
Yeah. So
which ape continues from the prior movie?
Roka?
Is that the odd ape?
He is I don't even know how I would describe Roka. He's like the elder Wiseman kind of ape. How would you describe him?
Kind of like a spiritual successor to Maurice.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, he's like a spiritual successor to Maurice.
My favorite ape in War, and I can't remember what the ape's name was, but he was sort of the not all there ape, you know?
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about.
Who didn't speak ape. He only spoke English, you know? I cannot remember his name, but I thought he was – I really enjoyed him. He was kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I was a bit concerned early that it was going to be another movie with a lot of reading sign language, but definitely not the case. There is a little of it at the very beginning, but that's because they are trying to be stealthy.
Yeah.
They definitely speak, and they have, you know, full conversations and such. It's not just reading.
Well, and Aaron Roka is played by Peter Macon. Macon, I don't know how to pronounce that, who also plays the Lieutenant Commander Bordas on the Orville.
Yeah, the voice really stood out for me. It's like I immediately had to go look up and see, is that who I think it is?
It's Bordas. No weird sex stuff in this one, though, so no. we're good. But
at least not from him.
At least not from him. That wasn't the only ape action I had this week, though. Uh-oh. I had the conclusion of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong.
Yeah, so I'm reading this book, and I look over to my wife, because my wife is well known to have issues with apes with guns, and so she does not like the apes movies. I'm like, so what is your stance on a ape with a Green Lantern ring? She's like, oh, no, that's fine. That makes sense.
So, Aaron, what'd you think of part seven of the final issue?
You know, I really enjoyed Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong. But I gotta say, I felt a little let down in the last issue. In fact, I think it would have been stronger had they just done a double-sized last issue combining the previous issue with this issue. I think would have been a stronger ending, because it almost, when Superman shows up, all of a sudden everything resolves, right?
Yeah, and it's like, oh wait, hold on, you really struggled to defeat all these characters before, and now you're taking them out in one panel. I felt like it wrapped up too quickly. I feel like this issue should have been double sized, or frankly, just go to eight issues. Because I feel like too much happened in this issue that it like everything that they had set up, all, you know, that the heroes were over their heads and all that stuff. They really have no issue taking down the bad guys in this
issue. I had a moment where I'm reading it and I'm like, this is supposed to be the last issue, right? Because I'm almost to the end of the issue. And then everything just happens.
Yeah, then everything literally, like, everyone's back home now at the end. And you know, you put a freaking Green Lantern ring on King Kong for only, like...
Yeah, for a know, scene, right? Yeah,
for I a mean, scene it, of enjoyment. I need more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to see, you know, King Kong join the Green Lantern Corps. You know, I mean, there are things I enjoyed about it, and I thought there were some nice set pieces. It just seems so very anticlimactic after everything it built to.
I love the reunion between Superman and Billy after Billy Batson's thought that he had killed Superman. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing, Superman and Lois again. But it felt like so much of it was, like you guys said, rushed in those few pages.
Unnecessarily. You had eight issues. And I think that's part of my issue. You had eight issues.
Well, and I mean, so Superman's been out of the action for a while in this series, and he miraculously returns. And instead of showing us the real time sort of, you know, resurrection of him, we get a 3-panel flashback of Superman explaining why he's back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, you have been teasing, you know, Superman's eventual return, but we don't get to experience it. I mean, it felt like a Brian Michael Bendis conclusion, right? He's just going to tell you what happened versus showing you.
Yeah. And I also didn't like the Toyman resolution. It just was too tight. Too clean, too tidy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And off screen, right? Like they just found his body.
And again, these are all things that I think would have been really entertaining to see. But for whatever reason, they compressed the story so much that they decided not to tell it to you or to show it to you. They just wanted to tell you about it. And I was frustrated by that. So I felt unsatisfied at the end. As much as I enjoyed the run, the previous 7 issues, I felt like issue 8 really let me down.
Yeah, and maybe it'll read fine in trade all as one unit, like you said, you know, combining the last 2 issues or reading them simultaneously. But it still felt like the ending was rushed.
I agree.
It just felt a little too tidy, which is a shame because, you know, I could absolutely. And like I said, this was issue 7 or 8, something like that.
Yeah.
And I really could have gone another 2 issues.
Yeah,
I do really appreciate how they dealt with Guy Gardner's death, though. The Superman saying, you know, I always liked him. And then the rest of the Green Lanterns, like, he was difficult to like.
I love he was an acquired taste with an aftertaste.
Yeah.
It seemed also strange to me, prolonged for the ring to choose King Kong. You know, every other time we see a ring choose somebody, it happens pretty immediately. And it seemed like the ring was off camera for a while before before it chose King Kong. I don't understand that. I mean, other than, you know, everything moved at the speed of story versus, you know, having any sort of internal consistency.
Yeah, exactly. So,
anyway, overall, I really enjoyed the series. I just wanted the end to be as wonderful as the prior issues.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But you know what is wonderful, Aaron, that you need to just put your hard-earned money into?
That's true. This is true.
Never going to happen, my friend.
Because Blood Hunt is just so good.
It's so good.
It's just so stupid good.
Can I just say that I throughout this entire Blood Hunt trauma that I've experienced, I feel like you guys aim the reviews at me.
And I wish here's the thing.
Like, I'm being victimized by your Blood Hunt review.
It's us thanking you, Aaron. Uh-huh, Aaron, this isn't really a review podcast. This is more of a comic book discussion podcast. And so, we discuss it with you.
Yeah, we would have never read it if it were not for you, Aaron.
I feel like this is a comic book intervention.
I will say, Aaron, I know now you're just like anti-Blood Hunt, but it is surprisingly good. It I talked a little bit about it in the first issue. It reminds me of a Tom Taylor deceased or Injustice or something like that, DC versus Vampires. It very much has that vibe, but this is an in-continuity story, and some of the stuff that they're doing is like pretty surprising. Now I have there's one thing that I'll say as it relates to the tie-ins, in that, you know, usually my frustration with comic book tie-ins is that they are so loosely integrated into the storyline, you basically just need to read the main story anyway. But with, I would say, the majority of the tie-ins that I'm reading right now, they feel pretty important to the storyline, and the storyline like references things from the tie-ins, for better or worse, right? Because for better, in that I'm glad I didn't waste my money reading Doctor Strange number 15, but for worse, because I feel like I have to spend more money, because if I didn't read Doctor Strange number 15, I would have lost something important between Blood Hunt 1 and 2.
See, I don't feel like I missed any. It made me interested to go out and see what happened in Doctor Strange, but I don't feel lost. Same with, I didn't read Dracula Blood Hunt, I don't think.
And, I haven't read that one either.
I don't feel like I missed. I feel like I got everything I needed for the story, but I'm interested in seeing what happened.
I do want to say I will probably pick up the Dracula one after reading Blood Hunt number two.
Yeah, I have never experienced the character that is Blade's daughter. She is awesome.
Yeah, she's not so much over in the Blade book, but she's good in this one.
I absolutely love this character from what we see here.
Well, yeah, I went back. So I started off my Blood Hunt journey this week by going back and reading Doctor Strange number 15 on Paul's recommendation. And of course, I should have realized it originally because it is written by Jed McKay, the author of the main series, who also writes Moon Knight. And I believe that issue is coming out next week, maybe next couple weeks. So I'll probably pick up Moon Knight as well, since it's also written by Jed McKay. But yeah, it was a Doctor Strange was great. I'm glad you tipped me off on it. And I really appreciate, you know, I don't think they do this enough these days, but on the first page of Doctor Strange number 15, it says, wait, you must read Blood Hunt number one before reading this issue. I like how they're giving some traffic signals like, ooh, you haven't read that one yet? Ooh, go back and read this first.
Yeah, you know that they're going to have to undo some of the vampirisms. There are three major characters that are turned. So,
well, I imagine
they're going to have to undo it.
I imagine magic's going to be involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so good. I mean, for what it's worth, I mean, I enjoyed, for different reasons, all three Blood Hunt books that I read this week, because I read Doctor Strange, which was, I thought, a great story that takes place in between Blood Hunt 1 and 2 that basically describes what happens in, you know, the Sanctum in between the issues. Blood Hunt number 2 was excellent. And Union Jack the Ripper, really enjoyed the shit out of this book. And I did not realize, because I said, it depends on the art. Well, the artist on it is Kev Walker, who was the artist on that Predator book that we enjoyed so very much. So I'm glad I picked this one up too.
Yeah, I will say that what you described before of tie-ins having nothing to do with the main story really, and not being necessary, Union Jack very much falls into that. But I loved it anyway.
Yeah, I'm just a fan of the Union Jack character. So you're right. It's probably not going to play an integral role to the main storyline, but it's so good. And the Union, you know, this, I don't know if you guys ever read the Union back 4 or 5 years ago, but I enjoyed the Union. So I like the references to the team here. And of course, the Kev Walker art is great. But there is one reference in the Ripper that makes me wonder when Wayne mentioned undoing vampirisms. You notice how Union Jack kept asking, you know, the vampires, like, who your master is, and how he's keeping his friend, who's now a vampire, chained up in the basement. In Marvel, I do believe that they have that rule where if you kill the master vampire, the people he turned revert back to normal. Is that right?
Yes, because that happened in that Spider-Man book that I was referring to a few weeks back.
That goes all the way back to when the X-Men were dealing with them, too, years ago. And the What If
Wolverine, I think, referenced that, too, right?
Yeah.
If Wolverine was Lord of the Vampires. I think that may be how they undo some vampirisms, is they're going to find the master vampire and, you know, murder it.
Yeah, and I am really curious how he turned.
Which Blade? One? Bulldog or?
No, Blade.
Oh, yeah. Spoilers.
What made someone who's been a hero and, you know, fighting all this time into
the Lord of the Vampires, basically?
Well, I have a theory. And this is spoilers for people who have not read it, you know, tune out. So did you notice that Blade in Blood Hunt number 2 kept talking about how he's been doing this for epochs?
Yeah, I think he's possessed or something.
Correct. Someone has taken over his body or transubstantiated or something has happened. Or maybe that's not the real Blade. Maybe that's someone who's taken the shape of Blade. So that is not our Blade, whether it's possession or doppelganger, shape changer. I don't know. But time of frame Blade references that he's been working on this plan far predates the, you know, 1960s creation of our Blade.
I feel like I have never read an in-continuity crossover quite like this.
Yeah.
And that's what's really, you know, hitting on me is just, you know, the level of violence, the level of character. And clearly, you know, I talked about Thor last time, you know, getting a stake through his head. It's still there, but he's tied up. So I'm assuming he's okay. He's alive. He's just got a giant stake through his forehead.
They obviously have a use for both him and Scarlet Witch. The fact that Scarlet Witch is still alive, they're going to use her.
When the Blood Coven was created by having them feed on the blood of superheroes, and, you know, Blade even talks about, you know, drinking the blood of Doctor Strange, about how different it is. So I do think they have more in plan for them than just using them as, you know, fuel for their super vampires. But if nothing else, you know, keeping them around for fuel for super vampires is not a bad use for them either.
I kind of love the Blood Coven. You know, they remind me a lot of the what was the name of that crew in the Infinity crossover?
Black Order?
The Black Order.
Yeah.
They're basically the vampire version of the Black Order, and I kind of love that about it. So
they got their clocks. They suffered defeat in Blood Hunt number 2, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I particularly love Vision in that fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I might take you up to where the sun is.
Yeah. So, you know, this is not pointed at you, Aaron, but it is I'm truly enjoying the hell out of Blood Hunt, and I'm in in a way I haven't been in crossovers for a long time.
Oh yeah,
same. I'm picking up tie-in books. Like, I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
I haven't read a crossover in I don't know how long, and this one is, though, is just scratch me right where I itch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I will say, for those Blood Hunt number 2, one of the variant covers is very misleading. It's a picture of like a vampire mouth open with a bloody Dracula in the middle. So at first I almost didn't get it because I was looking for Blood Hunt number 2, and I thought that was Dracula number 2, and then I realized, oh wait, that is the one I need.
Yeah, you got to be careful with those variant covers.
Yeah.
Well, Aaron, we can bring you back into the conversation because we can talk. Well, now we should be talking about Ghost Machine. We've now had second issues of all the titles, but more recently we had Redcoat number 2 and Rook Exodus number 2.
So
I like Simon Pure so much.
I did not enjoy Redcoat.
No,
I did not.
I struggled a little bit with it myself. And what's funny is I feel like they're trying too hard to make Simon Pure an asshole.
Well, and I think my issue with this is that it was too much Albert Einstein and not nearly enough Simon Pure. And,
well, and not just Albert Einstein, but child Albert Einstein.
Exactly. Yeah. That was my objection to it, because I'm like, God, I'm not enjoying Albert nearly as much as I think they want me to enjoy him.
Yeah. I felt the same. I found child Albert Einstein kind of aggravating and annoying. Yeah. He's short round.
But I like Short Round. I do not care for him, for this kid sidekick who is, you know, really the one with the brains. And of course he's going to be the one with the brains. He's Albert Einstein. I just, you know, I want to learn more about Simon Pure, and I feel like I'm just learning more about what Albert Einstein is doing in this story. I wanted to learn more about Benedict Arnold, who shows up in the story, and I thought that was really cool. But, you know, again, I just felt like things are kind of dominated by Albert Einstein. I like what's going on with, you know, Simon Pure in the relation to the cult that, you know, whose ritual created him or enabled him to be an immortal. I like the stakes there. I just want to spend more time with Simon than I want to spend with Albert Einstein.
I agree. And I kind of felt Albert was unnecessary except for a plot device. As an information giver, because Simon Pure could have just gone to see Benedict, could have had the same confrontation, could have still been hurt, could have gone and seen Benedict Arnold just the same. But they had shoehorned this little, expository font into this episode, which is Albert. Yeah. I felt the same about Albert, but I still enjoyed Simon. I really thought it was cool. I thought their portrayal of Benedict Arnold was great. And I liked the kind of the duality, the two of them, where you have, you know, Simon Pure, a redcoat who wasn't really that dedicated, kind of a deserter. And then on the other hand, you have Benedict Arnold as someone who, you know, was a traitor to the colonial forces. So they both kind of switched sides during the colonial war. So I kind of like that.
Benedict Arnold as a immortal as well.
Yes.
Whose origins are secret, but apparently, you know, he was involved in a similar ritual as Simon Pure. Benedict Arnold is enjoying a much more comfortable lifestyle than Simon Pure is. And, you know, it's having that conversation that you imagine that all the immortals have. You know, have you learned to save and invest and, you know, use the benefits of your extended life to make sure that you're comfortable? And of course, you know, Simon Pure is living day by day, you know, hand to mouth, no permanent residence, whereas, you know, Benedict Arnold has, you know, created deep roots and, you know, certainly is very comfortable financially. And seems to have political power as well. So I enjoyed that part of it. I you know, I'm not out of the book. I just was kind of let down with how much time we spent with Mr. Einstein.
No, I agree with you there. And I'm hoping he does not. He's not in such a prominent role in the upcoming issues.
You know, I feel like each story arc is going to involve other, you know, notables from history. I feel like this is sort of the establishing story that you know, lets us see who else Simon Pure interacts with throughout history. I just hope that they're less annoying when they come up. But, you know, Rook number 2 came out this week. I'm curious to see what you guys thought about that.
I loved Rook Exodus number 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it for me, you know, I kind of talked about how Rook kind of feels like it's based on an action figure line.
Yes.
And issue 2 struck me even more so. Because in issue 2, we've got more action figures on the board. We've got vehicles. We've got giant tanks and giant bears and, you know, like cars and spaceships that get exploded. I mean, it is just big screen fun. I think it is still missing an element of humor.
Mm-hmm.
It is still deadly serious. Humor. Yeah. But visually and you know, at its kind of core concept level, I think I'm all in.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, no, I thought issue 2 was very satisfying. Enjoyed, you know, where it's going, how it's moving. Love the stakes. I am curious about the cover for issue 3 that's previewed at the back of the book, and it's got who can he trust? And I'm like, well, can he not trust you know, the lady he's been working with. Now all of a sudden I've got to call that into question. So I'm a little concerned. But I do love the giant bears. And I bet Leo DiCaprio couldn't kill one of these guys.
Because the lady is Direwolf, right? That's her name?
Correct.
Direwolf. But we also have turtles with tanks on their backs in the next issue. Come on.
You know, one of the things when I read this, you know, the preview pages and that Ghost Machine book that Worth kind of previewed all these, I was not that interested in Rook Exodus. But after listening to you guys talk about issue 1, I went and read through it and then really enjoyed it. I sad to see our friend die in it. And then Rook 2 was great.
I
really enjoyed it. It makes I don't think the preview served it well in that Ghost Machine anthology book.
But I agree.
I don't think that Ghost Machine anthology was a thing. For what it's worth, it didn't serve anything well. I feel like they should have just not done it and just started the books.
Yeah. So I know, but I really am enjoying Rook Exodus.
You go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought.
Yeah, I love the Jason Fabok art, and like you said, there's all these genetically modified creatures that are, you know, hybridized with technology, and it's very interesting. And I love how the Direwolf is like, "Don't kill the bears." I would have been like, tell the bears not to kill me. Like,
that's right. That's right.
So dire bears.
I gotta ask. Yeah, I think that the biggest question that looms out of this book is, Andrew, will you be buying any of the Ghost Machine Ghost Roast coffee?
You know, that was what I was going to bring up. Is this the first time we've seen this ad?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know if it was going to be the digital copy or not. But yeah, but the back of both Redcoat and Rook. And I guess this coffee company actually makes DC-branded coffees, too.
That's hilarious.
So I don't know if I'm going to get the – I don't know if I'm getting the Ghost Machine Ghost Roast or if I'm going to get one of the DC ones. But, yeah, I actually am planning on buying some of the coffee.
It's great characters, great comics, great coffee. I find very interesting is on you know, they've got comic book artwork on the Ghost Machine coffee, and it's got Simon Pure and it's got Geiger, and then it's got Dire Wolf, who is not the star of the Rook Exodus book. I thought that was really interesting.
That was funny. You know, one of the things that I will say, they also advertise merch and apparel for Ghost Machine,
uh-huh.
and there's a black T-shirt featuring a giant eagle that says Rook Exodus that just kind of looks like a Rock Band shirt that I feel like I need in my life. I feel like I need that t-shirt.
Well, did you read the story about this coffee company?
I did not.
Yeah, so it was these two people. I think it was Tanya and Tracy, I believe. And, you know, they were fans of comic books, and they're husband and wife. And their fan, the wife, Tanya's passionate for drawing. They like comics. And so they started doing this, and they were at a convention in Florida. They're based out of Fort Myers, Florida. They're at a convention in Orlando, and they just, like 2021, and they just sold out every day they were there early. They had to go home early because they ran out of coffee to sell. And then so they decided they might have something with their coffee and roasting, and they reached out to DC and Warner Brothers. And then here we are 3-4 years later. So it seems like an interesting story.
But I'm probably going to pick up some of the coffee. Just give it a shot.
Yeah, I was looking. You know, the Ghost Roast is a light roast. I'm more of a medium to dark roast guy. Yeah. So, but I am planning on buying some.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Well, guys, I, you know, am not reading the, you know, Cobra Commander or any of the G.I. Joe or Energon Transformer books. But, Paul, I know that you are all about Cobra Commander. So tell me about this week's issue of Cobra Commander.
Well, so this is the final issue of Cobra Commander. And before I get into it, I just, you know, before I get into it, I do want to share that, you know, Cobra Commander, we talk, if you are a longtime G.I. Joe fan and are familiar with some of the old continuity and you're familiar with Cobra Law and, you know, the G.I. Joe, the movie, you know, kind of the retconning of Cobra Commander's origins, you know, they very much take that into play from the get-go in this series. So it put me in the mood to watch G.I. Joe the movie.
From live action movie?
No, sorry, the animated movie that introduced Cobra Law. Okay,
got it.
It is available for free in 4K on YouTube. So it's an hour and 33 minutes. G.I. Joe the movie, 1987, full movie 4K. I found it on YouTube. I hadn't intended on watching it on YouTube. I just kind of Googled to see where I could, if it was streaming anywhere, and it's free on YouTube. So, and if you are enjoying what's going on in the Energon universe, I highly recommend you watch that 1987 G.I. Joe the movie.
I might give it a watch because I've never actually seen it or really any other G.I. Joe.
It was very much a response to Transformers the movie.
Yeah, because I know originally they were going to kill one of the major characters and just put him in a coma after, you know, the death of Optimus Prime traumatized a generation.
Yeah, exactly. And it was supposed to be released theatrically, but it became a direct-to-TV release. There was, like, a lot of stuff that happened at the time. But I really recommend doing a search for it, especially if you're digging what they're doing, because they're integrating a lot of that continuity in here. And in 1987, it was controversial because there was no talk of this Cobra Law aspect until the movie, and it just retconned everything you knew about Cobra Commander. So, who was, you know, supposed to be, I think he was like a car salesman or some type of salesman who got sick of the system and formed Cobra. And this makes a lot more sense. And so you see the formation of Cobra, you know, and how Cobra Commander has kind of taken over a small city in the U.S. and Springfield, yep. And has recruited kind of, you know, the I don't want to say the worst of society, but he's recruited people who are amenable to hate, you know, and brought them in. It, you know, it kind of ties a lot in with the mob mentality, you know, stuff that we kind of talk about in politics nowadays. And I just thought it was really good. It really grounds this new version of G.I. Joe in modern world, and I really liked it, and I like how they brought Destro into it, and I like that they're setting up for this crossover, because the creatures or the citizens of Cobra Law have taken to the stars to understand more about the Transformers.
Yeah, because, you know, Cobra Law is all about, you know, bioengineering the human, not necessarily the human form, but the biological form. So they see the Transformers, these all metal creatures, as their antithesis. And so they're after the escape of one of the Decepticons from their lair, they are now on the hunt for to find out more about these Transformers so they can eventually destroy them. But I love seeing Destro and Cobra Commander, because I kept wondering, you know, Cobra Commander's raiding Mars facilities, stealing this, stealing that. You're like, how is he eventually going to get together with Destro? He's going to give Destro lots of money and hire him in a mercenary, kind of like their relationship was in the original, series lore. Mm. But I like how they put it together this time. They're two dangerous men meeting, and I liked how they set it up from sending Ripper as the disposable, expendable, Herald. To what happens when they show up in Springfield, to the end at the rally, where I think for the first time they unveiled the symbol in this timeline,
yeah,
right? The Cobra symbol.
Yeah. And we saw the first time we saw it was a couple pages earlier when we see his uniform for the first time with the helmet. Oh,
yep.
Because I had a chance to finish reading it while you guys talked about Ghost Machine books.
Yeah.
Well, and so, and what'd you think, Wayne? How'd you think about how it wrapped up?
I really enjoyed this series. I came in with no understanding or knowledge of Cobra Commander whatsoever. So this was all new to me. I don't know any of these characters, but, that didn't really hurt me enjoying the book at all.
I do like how on this show we have Wayne, who is a huge Transformer guy, but not a big G.I. Joe guy. And then I'm a huge G.I. Joe guy, but not really a Transformers guy. And then you've got Paul, who's just like
a little everything. Bit of both.
He's got everything.
A little bit of both.
He's the full deal. Full package.
But yeah, and it appeals to all three of us. Now, unfortunately, we can't talk about the next book in the G.I. Joe because we are on an embargo until June 3rd.
No.
Yes. But the next book in the Energon universe is coming out June 3rd. It's Scarlet Number 1.
I am really looking forward to its release.
Those preview pages were good.
Yeah. So.
So this week I was tooling around audible.com. And came across friend of the podcast, Fred Van Lente's author page, and discovered that he had a book streaming there free, included in your subscription. So if you are an Audible subscriber, there is a book there by Fred Van Lente that streams as part of your service. It is called The Con Artist, and it is a murder mystery set at San Diego Comic-Con. And I am zipping through it. It's fantastic. I recommended it to the guys on the show. Wayne, I know you've already started it and are close to being done as well. What do you think?
I am absolutely loving it. I mean, it is a book that takes place mostly at Comic-Con, written by a comic book creator that feels like it's a glimpse behind the curtain.
Yeah.
You know, so much of it, names are changed, but you can read between the lines and see who these characters are supposed to be, what the companies are. Feels like it's got a creator message to it, but also it gives you a little view of what it's like to be a artist in Artist Alley as well.
And it's peppered with real stories. It's one of the things that I really enjoy is the main character is talking about things that happen at different comic book conventions. And, some of those are actual, those things happened. And it's, Fred Van Lente's opportunity to share that. Now, for those of you who don't recall, Fred Van Lente is the guy who wrote the comic book history of comics. He has done a number of Marvel projects that we have been fans of and was a guest on this podcast several years back. I'm a huge fan of Mr. Van Lente, and I gotta tell you, I am really digging the concept of this story and the execution of the story. One of the things I just am particularly tickled by is that the main character, the protagonist, is essentially homeless. He just lives from convention to convention, and instead of negotiating an appearance fee, he just has them extend his hotel stay so that he can literally live from one convention to the next convention.
Yeah, you don't have to pay me to show up, just pay for my room for the week leading up to it.
I love it. I love it. It's really a very entertaining book.
Yeah, so. And the overall story for anyone curious about it, it takes place at a Comic-Con. It is about a comic artist, but it's also a murder mystery.
Yeah. Good stuff. Recommend it. It is The Con Artist by Fred Van Lente. And again, it streams included in your subscription at audible.com. Well, Paul, yes, it's sir. That time.
What comes out next week?
What comes out next week, Paul?
Well, it's a big Marvel week next week. We get the latest issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, the final issue of Avengers Twilight, and we get the first issues of Blood Hunt tie-in's Midnight Suns. So we've got a Midnight Suns tie-in, and we have Black Panther Blood Hunt number one, which, you know, if you've read Blood Hunt number two, you know, sets up what could be going on in that book.
Yeah, I'm obviously picking up Midnight Suns, even though it's not a Jed McKay book. I'm kind of torn on Black Panther. Are you guys thinking about picking it up?
I'm going to look at the I'm definitely in on Midnight Suns. I'm going to look at the preview art on Black Panther.
Yeah. Preview pages are important for these tie-ins for me. I look at all of the preview pages of all the tie-ins and pick which ones I pick up.
Sounds good. Okay.
All right, gentlemen.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. We want to know what you think of the G.I. Joe and Transformers books. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
Well, guys, have a great and wonderful Memorial Day holiday, and we will chat again next week.
Talk to you then.
See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.